This is the first of many times that the disciples find themselves in hot water with the authorities. Peter and John are preaching to the people at the temple when some high-ranking religious officials barge in and arrest them. And I chuckle at how Luke describes these authorities. He says that they are much annoyed by the sermon, which apparently is all the reason you need to break out the cuffs. That and believing in Jesus, and that in him there is the resurrection of the dead. So mid-sermon, the priests and the captain of the temple, like the pastor, the Sadducees, arrest Peter and John and put them in jail overnight. Now, some background info is in order. Before they began preaching in the temple that day, Peter and James had healed a man who had been lame from birth. Here's how it happened. The man was familiar to those who frequented the temple, and many worshipers probably knew him by name. Luke reports that people would come every day and they would pick up this man in a merciful and gentle way, and they'd carry him over to the entrance called the Beautiful Gate, a kind of high traffic area, if you will, on the way into the temple. So if you were making your way there for the hour of prayer, you probably went through the Beautiful Gate. You probably saw this man who's lame from birth. You may have known him by name. You may have had a nickname for him. He may have had a nickname for you. You may remember what happens when Peter and John pass through the gate. The beggar catches their eye and asks them for alms. They turn their full attention on him. "Look at us," they say. And then he focuses on them, probably expecting some kind of handout. Peter says, "Silver or gold have I none, but what I have I give you. In the name of Jesus Christ, stand up and walk." Peter takes the man by the right hand and raises him up, and immediately strength enters the man's ankles and his feet, and he starts to bounce up and down and dance. And before you know it, right during the middle of the service, he's bouncing up and down and jumping everywhere and dancing. And for the next hour, all the man can do is jump around the temple praising God. Here in everyone's midst, issuing from the power of Jesus' resurrection, is another little resurrection, a miracle from the same species of Christ's life, death, and resurrection, a disruptive and mysterious, but also life-giving, joyful, exuberant resurrection. How annoying! And why are the Sadducees and their companions so disturbed by this wonderful event? On the one hand, the Sadducees were a small but very powerful religious sect that did not believe in the resurrection. They had their reasons. Jewish leaders were divided about the issue. While other Jews did have hope in the resurrection, the Sadducees were sort of dug in on their side. There is no resurrection of the dead. Torah, they believed, did not predict the resurrection of the dead. That was their interpretation. Rather, faithfulness and observance of the Torah and obeying Mosaic law, temple rituals, that was faith. End of story. But on the other hand, this Acts story reveals the effects of a new kind of power being unleashed in the world, a power that threatens in some ways the powers that be and their hold on power. The Sadducees are established religious leaders. Their systematic theology just simply doesn't make room for resurrection. So when they see this beggar healed and jumping around and then hear the disciples telling everyone that it's the result of the risen Jesus, these powerful people feel a bit threatened. They know the question arising in people's hearts is something like, "Well, who's in charge around here?" After all, Luke also reports that after Pentecost, the number of believers around Jerusalem was about 5,000. And that's kind of Baptist inflation, I think. Just, it could have been like 3,000, but we're going to go round up to 5. Anyhow, either way, the message of the good news of the end of death and the beginning of new creation is spreading like exponentially, like at the speed of sound. And now it's dawning on the Sadducees and that the one in whose power the powers thought they'd buried is back and more powerful than ever. And they must suppress the message. They arrest the messengers. They throw Peter and John in the slammer. Now this Acts story takes me back to another story I remember from the Christian leader, author, activist Jim Wallace. He's the founder and editor of Sojourners magazine. So Wallace was present in the congregation the day that it happened at St. George's Cathedral in Cape Town, South Africa, during the fight over apartheid. Bishop Desmond Tutu was preaching when all of a sudden the South African police came in and marched around to the outer walls of the aisles and stood with recorders and notebooks and dour facial expressions. And Tutu was preaching. They just came in right in the middle of the sermon. And they just arrested Tutu and others weeks before. Now they're back to come again and pressure and intimidate. And Tutu acknowledged them. He said, "You are powerful. You're very powerful. But I serve a God who cannot be mocked." And then he looked them in the eye and he said, "Since you've already lost, why don't you come over and join the winning side?" Wallace said, this is like every preacher's dream, by the way, for something like this to happen. Wallace said Tutu issued this invitation with a smile and his kind of characteristic playfulness and warmth. The officers remained standing but were stunned. How did the congregation respond? Wallace says they were literally transformed by the bishop's challenge to power. From a cowering fear of the heavily armed security forces, he said, that surrounded the cathedral and greatly outnumbered the band of worshipers. He said, "We literally leapt to our feet, shouted God's praises, and danced." Whew. Who's in charge around here? Certainly not the authorities. They're always thrown back on their heels when people begin dancing. Tutu would also say it wasn't his power either, but the power of God. Who's in charge around here? Is it not the God of the risen Jesus Christ? We often forget that Jesus' resurrection, while it was a singular event in history, was not an aberration, but a detonation. Jesus' resurrection was like a blast with an enduring shockwave, with incalculable power. The resurrection of Jesus Christ sets off a chain reaction of little resurrections everywhere, multiplying exponentially throughout all creation, throughout all history, and throughout our lives, our personal lives, our communal lives. We believers are simply the messengers of this power and the witnesses of this power. We get to share in it and see it and look for it and set things up so that it might more likely happen than not. And we're accomplices to such resurrection power, and that's what lies at the heart of Christian joy. Now, I don't currently expect any officials like the Sadducees or the police to come in and surround us, but I do recognize something about the enemies that we're up against today, or we might even say the headwinds of loneliness, of despair, of nihilism, of division, of partisanship, of travel sports. There's a lot coming at us, you know. Today we contend with something more like invisible enemies. Recently, I shared at church conference some of the details of the Surgeon General's report last year. You may have seen this. He was calling the nation's attention to what he called an epidemic of loneliness. And he compared the degree to which we are lonely, having a health impact on us, equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. As well, I reported that Gen Z, who's that? That's those aged 12 to 27 right now. They report being sadder at their age than any other generation ever polled. I also invited our church that evening, the church conference, to begin imagining a congregational effort to cut across the grain of these phenomena. And that's what we're going to do. Beginning now, I'm inviting our whole church, those here in person, and you who are with us online, who are regularly with us online especially, into an effort of what I want to call the art of belonging. Now, this is not an invitation to self-preservation. This is not a church growth strategy. It is not a new program. Rather, this is an invitation to all of us to cast our sails and to catch the wind of God's resurrection shockwave. It is an invitation to trust God's resurrection power and to bring new life where there has been despair, friendship where there has been loneliness, new vigor where there has been listlessness, dancing where life has only been sullen and somber. It is an invitation to recognize that we are not in power and we are not in control of our ultimate destiny. It is an invitation to intentionally fall backward, completely and even foolishly, trusting God's steady hand will raise us up to new life. I'm going to give you an example of the kind of thing I'm talking about. In the late fall, mid to late fall, early winter of 2019-2020, I spent time writing handwriting. And that was the hardest part, trying to remember how to write in cursive. Personal letters to about 30 young people in our community who still live in Asheville, who used to be part of our congregation, and for whatever reason, have wandered away. And my colleagues helped me find the list of people to contact. Eddie Morgan, signature among them at the time, said, here's who you need to write to. And so I set about just systematically writing page-long letters, and the common theme of these letters was, this is your church. And this congregation has a claim on you, but it's also your home too. What if you came back and we did something new together? And my plan was to follow up with phone calls. And guess what happened? March 2020 happened. But in that interim time of writing those letters, three out of about 30, I should say, actually showed up. That's 10%, huh? We're beating the Lipper average already. But what if we all do something that trusting, and I guess foolish, What if we all did something, some things like this together, and we got organized about it? So we're going to work on this together. Ministerial staff and deacons already talking about it. Congregation and leaders and councils will be working on this together. It'll be fun and life-giving and hopeful, I promise you. We're going to focus on something and threadbare part of our congregation in every age range and every dimension we can find, and invite people here to come anew or to come back and to remember that they're beloved, to remember that we're part of an intentional community of prayer, to eat together, starting here but emanating out toward every table, and wondering when the Spirit might show up anytime we break bread together, to nurture and replenish the body in our weak places, and to aspire to new creation. This past weekend, or the latter half of this past week, I was with a small group of folks who were working with some national leaders who came here to work and help give us some direction in our CARES parenting initiative. And as we sat together for several days, And the national experts, Trey Wentz and Ken DeCreasy Dean, led us in these workshops, I began to have a familiar feeling. Through the process of dreaming and creativity and hopefulness and originality, I began to recall other times in my personal and professional life when I felt the Holy Spirit descending like a dove and filling the room with power. Now, it always happens in one spot, but then it begins to spread quickly, rapidly, like fire. And I recognize the same element in the air, the same Spirit in the air washing over me, and it lifted me up. Like a weak beggar sitting by the beautiful gate, something pulled me up by its right hand and stood me, and I could feel new strength in my ankles and in my feet. And I want to stand before you today and say, now it's time for all of us to experience this anew. And I'm so grateful that God has given us so much good work to do. And I'm so excited to look at you today and say, get ready. Resurrection power has been detonated, and the shockwave is on its way to each one of us. I hope you are not annoyed by my invitation. After all, the invitation isn't coming from me. How wonderful.